This is Karen Elizabeth, Pat and Jack's baby girl, and welcome to Karen's Inquisitive Corner. I hope you all enjoyed Self-Care Month in September. October is Mental Health Awareness Month. So this month, we're going to focus on mental health. And I will be having some pop-up interviews throughout the month. So please make sure you tune in and please, please, please like and share. And thank you for that. So today we have a guest and her name is Lena. You all probably read where I put in some of the statistics regarding burnout. Statistics say that there are 52% of people that actually work are burnt out of their jobs. And along with burnout becomes a lot of physical and mental signs and symptoms of just being burnt out. And a lot of times we're in the forest and we can't see the forest for the trees. So we're in the job, we're having these mental and physical things going on with us, but we don't correlate it with being burnt out. There was also a study with a set amount of people. And in that study, it was found that 70% of the people that were a part of the study were actually burnt out of their jobs. And there are, of course, other things that you can be burnt out with. But today, we're going to focus on just being burnt out and how it affects us physically, but mostly how it affects us mentally. So Lena is going to come on. She is a licensed social worker, and she's also a licensed therapist. She has a special needs child, and she has a lot of things going out, and she herself have actually experienced burnout. So she's going to come on. She's going to kind of tell us how she led up to this burnout, how it affected her. If you have any questions, please let me know. But I'm hoping some of you that may be in a job or in a situation that you can relate to Lena and really define that I'm burnt out. And of course, we're going to talk about what to do when you come to that conclusion that you're burnt out. So let's bring Lena on right now. Hello, Lena.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. So tell us where you are.
I am in New Jersey, Central Jersey, for those who believe that there's a Central Jersey. There's a big old debate on that, but I am so excited and so grateful to be here. Thank you.
I am so glad to have you. Lena, let's start out. We always want to start out from the beginning. What led up to you being burnt out, and how did you realize you were burnt out? What were some of the physical and some of the mental things that were physically going on with you to say, hey, you know, something's going on here, and for you to figure out actually what it was?
I think a lot of it was kind of that dread every morning waking up, you know, and I'm a crier. That's kind of how I express a lot of my emotions through tears. You could blame it on me being a Cancer. You can blame it on whatever you want to blame it on, but I become tearful. So, you know, most of my mornings I would wake up and I would just start crying out of nowhere and just not looking forward to the day. I was very blessed to start out. I got hired shortly after my internship. And so it was at an adult partial care. So it was kind of just, you felt like you were on 24/7 once you were at the job. So it was kind of like those thoughts of saying, like, once my day starts, it's not going to end until I come home. And so there didn't really ever feel like there would be a break once I, you know, stepped foot, not even once I drove onto the premises before even clocking in. And so when you start to express some of those concerns, you know, you have things, phrases and, you know, lack of support, right? I think was a big piece of it. And so you try and ask for help and you're told you're too young or you're too new in the field or, you know, and so it's like, okay, well, it doesn't change how I'm feeling. This is how I'm feeling.
You were really already tired before you even went to the job. You know, when you got up, I've been that way. So when you get out of the bed, you're already exhausted and think, oh my God, I got to go in. But your job didn't start that way.
I went from 9 months of being unpaid as an intern to balancing classes, balancing my school assignments. I had a part-time job because I needed a little bit of source of income. I'm very blessed that I didn't really have, you know, quote unquote, true bills, but I was still working, you know, so I didn't have a lot of time. And so I was already, you know, that's a big conversation that we're having in the social work field and in any of the helping profession fields, especially with advocating for paid internships so that we don't feel like we have to have a part-time job in addition to, right? And so we're already entering this field in such a high level of stress, and you don't really catch a break. I graduated in May. I started full throttle July 5th. And so you didn't really have a lot of downtime. I probably worked, you know, I was working a retail job, so I probably worked as many hours as I could, you know, in the interim and, you know, getting ready. And so we were already kind of starting fatigued, right? And feeling pulled thin. They're preaching self-care in classes. They're talking about burnout and compassion fatigue, but you're like, oh yeah, once I graduate, this will be a breeze because all I will have to do is deal with work. And that wasn't the case.
Right? Emphasize on you did your internship and then you went right into work.
Correct.
But then a couple of things. So after you did 8 hours, you went home, you had a special needs child. So your job didn't stop. It kind of kept going. But you said something really interesting about going through your intern, graduating, and then going back to work. Now, in hindsight, do you think you should have took some time off between graduating and then, you know, hitting the job market right then?
It's tough to say. I don't think so, because I think all of my experience that I got led me to where I am today, led me to the flexibility that I have today, the knowledge that I have today. And so when I was working in partial care, I wasn't a mom yet. So I was just kind of just fatigued and drained from that nonstop. I had started to notice a little bit more of that burnout. My heart wasn't in it as much. I had asked for a transfer over into the other department, which was our outpatient. And so that allowed me a little bit more flexibility, and that I'd never know how to do one thing at once, you know, which is why, which also contributes to some of that burnout, right? Is that, you know, we stretch ourselves too thin, whether it's within our control or not. And so then at that time is when I had gotten pregnant, which was almost a blessing in disguise because I had a little bit more flexibility in managing my caseload. And so I was able to take off for doctor's appointments. Whereas on the other side of the department, because they always had to fill ratio for groups and stuff, you always kind of got side eye or trouble trying to take off, or you were guilted into taking off for too much. And it's like, I don't know, you know, you kind of feel stuck. And so switching over to the outpatient was really helpful, but then there was high caseloads, right? There was a lot of, you know, constantly talking about productivity, talking about just, again, demand. And now we have a newborn at home, right? And so at that time, I didn't know he would be special needs, but still navigating, you know, going from one doctor to the next doctor. And then you continue to see how long can you last, right? How long can I put up with this before a change needs to be made? And like a change that I can have control over versus a change that's forced upon me.
A lot of people in the medical field are experiencing that. You know, it's just kind of too much. Explain, what are some of the things that you were experiencing every day on your job that's led to this burnout?
We had 80 plus cases. I was responsible for 80 plus people. So that's, 80 plus stories. And I was kind of on the lower end of that. And so, you know, some people were in the upwards of 90 and 100 clients, you know, they weren't expected to see them weekly, but you know, that also caused a lot of strain too, because you wanted to see them more often, but you didn't have the availability in your schedule because you needed to fit everyone else in. So it kind of felt like you were doing a lot of surface level work because, you know, seeing everyone, you know, every other week or every 3 weeks, once a month, it feels like just checking in at that point. And adding another layer of majority of my caseload was Spanish speaking as well. So that also adds another complexity to it. And, you know, thinking in it, I speak Spanish and I'm blessed and that I'm able to do so, but it just takes another layer of energy out from the day to day, right?
Yes.
Not my first language. So I'm thinking in English, you know, translating it into Spanish and, you know, receiving what they're saying and then translating it back. And so there feels like a lot more of that, that demand. And then we're getting pulled to go interpret and help with the psychiatrist, and which we were okay with, but then they were coming at us saying we weren't meeting our productivity numbers. We weren't meeting. And it's like, how do you want us to be in two places at once? So it just felt like anything that we did was never enough. And forget about paperwork. Paperwork was another, you know, that's another administrative thing that they didn't really, you know, offer that support or offer those demands. And so you just kind of felt like that candle's burning at both ends. I had already started my private practice shortly after getting my full licensure, so as an LCSW, but I wanted to grow it slowly, but again, it felt like that candle was burning at both ends, and I couldn't wait until I was comfortable enough to have a full caseload in private practice in order to kind of transition out from community mental health.
You know, it really kind of feels like again, coming from the medical field and audience, not just the medical field. I mean, this could be any and everywhere that you work. Sometimes it's so much paperwork and it's so much dot this I, cross this T, you know, you have to make sure you do that. But then when am I going to help the patient? You know, when am I going to be there for the patient? You know, how can I be there for the patient? And when you touch here and there and you're not really given 100%, then you kind of feel like, because medical is just in us, you know, it's just a part of us, that we're not really given what we should, you know, to the patient and what they really need.
I would love to meet everyone in like their first 6 months of a job, right? Or their first year of working there. And, you know, we were some of the newer hires within like 9 years, you know, so there was a lot of kind of old school mentality, or just, you know, like they were already burnt out. So they weren't, you know, anytime you're trying to come up with an idea or you got shut down. So that lack, like it became very lackluster, that, you know, that sparkle really started to dim early on, because it's like, okay, well, why am I going to keep trying? Why am I going to, if I know that I'm going to get shut down? And so that kind of ruins that creative spirit, right? Being in work environments that don't allow you to express yourself creatively. And, you know, that if you just get heard, or, you know, they try out your idea, you can feel like you're making an impact, whether it's healthcare, whether it's, you know, a traditional office job, whatever it may be, you want to feel like you belong there and you're valued. And that's the biggest part. Anytime that I work with companies, it's feeling when their staff talk about not feeling valued, not feeling appreciated. And sure, do we all want more money? Absolutely. Right. That's always, you know, but I try to work with companies. I try to work with teams. How can we appreciate one another beyond just a monetary appreciation? Right. That thank you, that recognition, it does go a long way.
What were some of the physical and mental things that you were going through during the time?
A lot of dissociation. So a lot of kind of just feeling disconnected from not really being present in my conversations, both with clients and with family members and friends, coworkers, just not really being mindful throughout my day. And I'm supposed to be paying attention to my clients, right? So it's that's when you start to notice, okay, I'm not doing my job accurately. That fatigue, right? I definitely, my sleep suffered, because, you know, you're either up trying to do notes, or you're just up stressed about not having everything caught up, or, you know, just that emotional mental drain of the day. So then you're kind of doom scrolling on your phone and, you know, avoiding things, definitely having some, you know, unhealthy eating habits, and, you know, the sleeping too much, sleeping too little, right? So it mirrors depression very closely, right? Mm-hmm. Again, so that those feelings of like hopelessness, the feelings of that lack of loss of interest in things that you used to enjoy. So like I said in the beginning, I'm a crier. So a lot of the times I would notice, okay, I would do okay for a couple months, couple weeks, and then just spiral again into, you know, another round of tears, another round of, I can't do another day of this. So feeling like you truly like can't go on.
That incompetency on your job, did it enter into your home life too? You just kind of felt incompetent everywhere because all the pieces just weren't, you know, no fitting together. I know I just wasn't able to think I wasn't able to think things through and, you know, think logically, and I was forgetting stuff, you know, a lot of that. And I couldn't separate it from work and home. You know, I just couldn't separate it.
Correct. Yep. And I'm so grateful to my partner, where he is very grounded, very level-headed. You know, he encourages me, and, you know, sometimes he's like, even now when I start getting too overtired or I'm not taking care of myself, he's like, go take a nap. Like, because that negative self-talk really revs up and says that we're not doing enough, says that, you know, I'm failing in all of the things, or, you know, I need to be 10 steps ahead of where I'm at currently. And so it really, I do have tendency to beat myself up. And so it's with his support and his reminders of all the things, you know, I'm very big on reminding people to zoom out, and he's reminds me to zoom out, right? Look back, take a step back and look at how far you've come, all the things you've accomplished, and not even just accomplishments career-wise, but just, you know, raising a child and, you know, doing it with a smile and do, you know, whatever it looks like to you. Look at how many people love you, and just going around and really appreciating the things that you do have. It reminds you, right? It reminds you, like, okay, I do have things to be grateful for. I do have things that I'm blessed to say that I have. And it may be hard now, but this is all just those warning signs that change has to be made.
What was the straw that broke the camel's back that said no more?
I left right before the pandemic started. So I left in January of 2020, not knowing, of course, that, you know, in March, the world would look a lot different. But we had finally got an appointment to the developmental pediatrician in sometime in 2019. And we walked out with 11 different referrals. So I had gone throughout that whole year of going, balancing and managing doctor's appointments. And I think it was kind of that push of, okay, I need to have a little bit more flexibility and control over my schedule and my hours. And that's when I had left. I still had my practice at the time, but I had left and started working at a group practice as my main source of income while I continued to still build my private practice. Mm-hmm. And so that, because again, I couldn't do that full-time expectation and those hours the way that the clinic or the outpatient department had wanted, you know, and navigate doctor's appointments and try and, you know, also manage my own caseload. So it felt like those candles were burning. I don't know that I would still be there currently just because of lack of support. But I think just having my child really put things into perspective of, like, we have to do things for them, right? We have to, and leaving places like that, take care of ourselves so that we can take care of our children and take care of our family.
The lack of support that we receive in some of our jobs, they want you, or you feel like, let me say that, they want you to put this job first. This job is first. I don't care about your family. I don't care about what you're going through. This is your priority. And, you know, I want you here. I want you to do that. And that's really disheartening, too, when you work at jobs like that, that you don't feel appreciated, that you don't feel listened to. But, you know, if your child is sick, your husband is sick, your mom is sick or something like that, that is the priority. You left the job. And how did you feel when you left the job? Like, you're being anxious or fearfulness, you know, I'm sure you probably had headaches and all of this, trying to remember things. Did it go away overnight, or did it gradually go away? Or did you just feel like I could just exhale?
I think there's definitely that big sigh of relief, right? You know, like, okay, that change is coming. And I probably gave them like a 2 month notice, 2 to 3 month notice, only because between the time that I had accumulated, as well as all of the different hours, and because of the size of my caseload, I wanted to be able to properly terminate with my clients. So think about breaking up with 80 plus people, you know, that's also, you know, so like there was, and you had to kind of mask your excitement, you know, like you had to, I was sad to be leaving my clients, right? I was sad to be terminating that. And it was just kind of out of hole of, I was just sad that we were, our voices and our concerns weren't heard, or they weren't put into practice. And so, so I think kind of masking that, like, yeah, I'm excited to leave, and, you know, kind of playing it off as if, you know, you are still really sad and mournful on leaving the job, and giving them X amount of months notice just out of courtesy and again for proper termination. And then of course, change is scary and, you know, it's nerve wracking because, you know, not many people who have their own jobs, you know, might not be able to go on their spouse's health insurance, which is part of why a lot of people have to stay on working a full-time job for benefits. And so it worked out really well for us that I was able to get onto his health insurance. But again, that change is scary, right? Navigating, you know, again, managing your time, managing all of the different pieces, but I knew that I would have a lot more support. I knew that it would be something that, again, I was in more control over because if I needed to take a day off, I could, and I wouldn't, no one would give me, you know, any sort of backlash for that or any side eye. So that in itself was worth the exchange.
Burnout can be disappointing. It can really be disappointing because you gave your all to this job. And that's some of the things that you can actually go through when you go through burnout. So if you had to name some of the emotions, some of the feelings that you actually went through during this process, what would some of those adjectives be?
Overwhelmed, exhausted, depleted, I think is a big one. Feeling anxious, feeling depressed, feeling hopeless, feeling like there's just no way out. Right? Like that cycle, you just can't see out of that cycle. I think also like almost like a numbness, right? That detachment from just your own personal being, your environment, your quality of work, right? So just kind of, you're just kind of existing, you're just there, yes. But there's no life to you.
I would definitely agree. Mm-hmm. Did you deliberate before you said that I'm leaving?
I think towards the end, it was just kind of like those countless tears and knowing that I had my partner's support in making that transition. There were so many of us that were leaving sort of one after the other. And, you know, the more people that were leaving, the more demands were put on others. And so again, I was already at my limit and, you know, I didn't want to stay for the aftermath. Right.
I totally understand. It also brings out that therapists are human. Mm-hmm. You know, they're human. What they go through is human. You know, they feel the same things that everybody else feels. And sometimes they need that therapist or they need that counselor or they need that encouragement. You know, they can help others, of course, but you still go through things in your own life. Mm-hmm. At the end, you left the job, you started your own practice. Was it just the affirmations from your partner that really got you there?
It was a big part of it. My love language is my words of affirmation. That self-talk isn't always believable, right? When we're in a headspace that's very negative or very down or very hard on ourselves, it's like, I don't know, you know, do I really believe that? But when I hear it from him, I know that he's speaking from his heart. And so I have that sometimes to lean on and just kind of that support. I think I was even in therapy at that time before leaving the job. And again, just still, I still wasn't able to kind of work through it. And so again, it was just so many different ways of like, okay, what can I do? And I think also like that self-talk really started to kind of become my own words as well, right? Those reminders of self. I was able to improve my sleep. I was able to, it's ironically, my commute was a little bit longer going to the group practice, but I was able to listen to like podcasts and, you know, some self-help versus like just sleeping until the last possible minute, getting ready as quickly as possible and ending up at the job. Like I didn't create a lot of buffer time in between, you know, but I think that you felt human again, right? Like you felt like there was something to be excited for. My days weren't nearly as long as what they were when I was working in outpatient or as packed, you know, the way that they were. And again, it still allowed flexibility. It allowed me to spend time with my family, you know, and so it, again, you were able to come alive. And so you got to see your personality come back.
And then also just knowing that you're worth it. Mm-hmm. That you're definitely worth it. And you're exactly right. You can encourage yourself over and over and over again, but you always need that person to say, hey, you're going to make it. And, you know, audience, That's the type of people we need to surround ourselves with. That's going to support us. That's going to understand us. That's going to stand by us. We need that. We need to hear that. You know, we need that mentally to come into our psyche. Affirmations are amazing. You can post them on your refrigerator. You can listen to them or just have your own to remind yourself every day. And that is really the foundation of self-care. Is knowing that you're worth it, going out there, you know, making that decision and finding you and finding a better place and a place where you can be you and actually flourish.
And that change doesn't, it most likely won't happen overnight. Those symptoms won't happen overnight. It's that gradual buildup. And you got to kind of build self-trust, you know, again, within yourself of like, okay, do I really trust my thoughts? Do I, you know, believe that? And, but the more you repeat it, the more that you create, make a plan to create change. And little by little, you make a life that you want. So
you also said something a little earlier. That you said your partner said is to look back at all the things you've accomplished. But some days it's really discouraging. It's really, really discouraging. And people can see your smiles and your happiness. And you kind of made the comment that you were smiling, but maybe crying, you know, on the inside. So we definitely have to kind of look back to see where we've come from, where God has brought us from to this day. And then that would kind of encourage ourselves. Lena, thank you so much. I have really enjoyed this interview. Every corner, I end with what I know that I know that I know. So I would like to, I would like for you to close out the corner today. Tell us what you know that you know this day.
I know that I'm not alone. And I think the more that we talk about burnout, the more that we talk about mental health, the more that we surround ourselves, like you said earlier, with people who love you and support you and believe in you, that you remember, you remind yourself that you're not alone in whatever struggle you're going through, but you're not alone. I promise you, you're not the first person to go through this and you won't be the last.
Beautiful. Thank you. And I also want to remind the audience that I am a life coach and my first hour is totally 100% free. So if you want to call somebody and just talk, if you want to sit there for an hour and cry, if you want to curse, if you just want to be silent, you know, whatever you need, call me. Call me. If you need encouragement, I don't have to know you to encourage you and to remind you what an amazing person you are and that you're going to make it and that you're worth it. Just remember Karen's Coaching Corner. Lena, thank you so much. I really appreciate you. Audience, I'll see you next Saturday. Bye-bye.
Thank you.